Hello and welcome to Read It With Whiskey. My name is Laura Gentinen and I am your host. We have a really, really fun episode for you guys today. We are interviewing Danielle M. Orsino. And whew, we had a very long discussion. I think we filled up the entire hour when we initially interviewed. Oh my goodness, it was so much fun. But let me tell you a little bit more about Danielle before we dive into the interview. Danielle M. Orsino is a fantasy novelist whose lifelong vision is to create whimsical realms that her readers can escape to. Her compelling word weaving pays homage to a multitude of personal muses, from Chris Claremont and George Perez to Anne Rice and Wonder Woman. The creative spark of storytelling has been with Danielle ever since she was a child, but martial arts and her nursing career took center stage into adulthood. Then, on a day like any other, it was reignited during the most unexpected of moments while treating one of her patients. Danielle took it upon herself to tell them a story. Before she knew it, what started as an imaginative tale to pass the time turned into a book, followed by an entire series, The Birth of the Fae. And The Birth of the Fae, Book 1, Locked Out of Heaven, is what we are going to be talking about today. But don't worry, in the interview, we dive into the entire series at a glance. Oh my goodness, it's so exciting. But here is what Locked Out of Heaven is all about. They are the Fae. Ride on the backs of fire-breathing dragons with the Dark Fae and watch the Light Fae play in the shadows of primitive humanity as they build their magical world. Abandoned by their creator, two factions of powerful angels remain on Earth after the Great War with Lucifer. They struggle to comprehend their creator's plan while their angel wings, a symbol of their angelic lineage, slowly and painfully decay. With no hope of returning to the Shining Kingdom, two groups of angels denounce their angelic lineage and develop into separate factions. The Court of Light, led by Queen Aurora, a former virtue angel, and the Court of Dark, ruled by King Jarvok, a former Power Brigade angel. The two monarchs have opposing views on how to govern their kin, but the one belief they agree on is that human worship equals power. It is incredible the amount of effort and passion that Danielle puts forth in her stories and in creating her worlds in general. But these books are more than just what meets the eye. It is a very long series and we will get into all of those details. So I think I just got to stop talking here. Let's dive into the interview. Welcome to Read It With Whiskey, the interview podcast featuring science fiction and fantasy authors. My name is Laura Gentinen, your host and the author of the Shockwave series. I am also a book club moderator, speaker, and avid reader, truly invested in every author's story. Within this podcast, I bring to you, the reader, all the behind-the-scenes secrets to how these guest indie authors bring their books into the world. If you are a sci-fi fantasy reader, then you need to hear from these authors. Let's learn about the person behind the page. Sit back, sip some whiskey, and lean in to these self-published authors. Really quickly, I want to give you an episode update. All Laura J. Live update content will now be exclusively given to our Patreon members. This segment will no longer be featured in these public episodes on your favorite podcasting platform. However, you can gain access to this content by visiting www.patreon.com/readitwithwhiskey. Now, let's get on to the episode. Hello and welcome to Read It With Whiskey. I am so excited to talk to you, Danielle. How are you doing today?
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited for this.
This is going to be so much fun. We're going to talk all about Birth of the Fae, Book 1. We might get a little bit into some of the other books within the series as well, but that is our main objective, talking about this first book in the series. But before we dive in, I would love for you to tell our listeners, why did you decide that you wanted to be a writer?
I kind of fell into it. I can't tell you that I woke up one morning and went, oh yes, today I shall write my novel. No, that's not how this happened at all. I was actually working as an IV nurse in a Lyme disease clinic. And I had a patient who just didn't want to sit in the chair anymore for a lot of different reasons. And basically he was like, you need to keep me in this chair. And so we had a conversation, shared some stories back and forth. And I said, well, tell me something interesting about yourself. And he said, I was recruited by the CIA out of college. And so, you know, a couple jokes made about conspiracy theories, all that stuff. And he informed me he did not take the job for a variety of reasons. And so I said, well, you know where Lyme disease came from. Once again, conspiracy theories abound. And so I said, no. And for some reason to this day, I do not know what made me say this. I said, no, it came from the Fae. And he was like, the who? So I went back and forth on the fairies and explained it. And out of my mouth came the words, no, they're angels who were locked out of heaven. And every day that he sat in the chair, I told him another chapter of this story I was just making up off the top of my head. And I put him in the story as this CIA agent who was sent to this Lyme disease clinic to find out if this nurse was a Fae human hybrid and, you know, told him the background of the Fae. And we just talked every day. And so I just thought, all right, I'll tell this man this story. And I was very close to him as a patient. We were friendly. And so I kept him in his chair and things that would happen in the IV room became part of the story. The doctor had this big black Labrador retriever. So the dog would walk in and I'd be like, and then the dark king, you know, Fae King had this big black dragon. I would make something up and, you know, we just kind of kept going and he stayed in the chair, which I was grateful for. And then one day he was like, you need to write this down. He's like, seriously, you have to go write this story. And I'm like, yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm going to PA school, dude. I'm going to make that money. Like, I don't have time to go be a writer. And the universe had other plans. And I couldn't go to PA school because I had an allergy to the entire class of drugs I was working with, cephalosporins. I found out I was anaphylactically allergic to. Wow. So the universe went, oh no, you're going to be a writer, girl. And I wound up sitting down and writing this story and it became Birth of the Fae. So no, I didn't wake up one morning and say, I'm going to be a writer, but the universe definitely went, you're going to go be a writer.
I'm
grateful for it.
That. I love that so much. And I love that you have this whole story of how you created this idea, because there's so many books out there about Fae in general, but mm-hmm. I think the birth of the Fae, where they came from, I don't see as many stories about that. So I love that it came out of your real life, just telling a story to somebody and it morphed into something so huge. And so now you have two of these books published. How many are going to be in the series?
I'm aiming for probably about 15 is where I think it's going. Now that could all change, but that's where I'd like it. I don't really have an ending planned per se. It's not like I'm sitting here counting it out, but so far written and done, there are 9 finished, but I do plan more on the way because I go from the beginning of time, as we know, with Locked Out of Heaven, Thine Eyes of Mercy, we're in Tudor England, and I continue to go. By the time we get to book 7, 8, and 9, we are in the 21st century. So I do intend to keep going with it. The struggles of the Fae and how they integrate into humanity, that is, I can't say, oh yes, I'm going to end it in this timeline or this time. I don't know. But 15 is about always where I saw it with offshoots because there are so many characters. It can kind of go wherever it wants. So I left some battles very nebulous in the story. You know, we talk about the Battle of Secor Valley, the Battle of Dristan. I leave them where you know something happened and there's a character where it's like, I had this happen to me here, or we lost the ice breathers here. They had something happen. And I mention it because from there I can pick that up later on and give you, here's what really went down. Now here's the whole story. So I've left these little offshoots that we can always pick up and revisit later on.
Yeah, almost like little Easter eggs just for the potential of some type of story to evolve. I really like that. And I like doing that in my own writing as well, leaving stuff open because you can always fill it in later on. The reader doesn't need to know everything right now, which is just really exciting for the writer because then we can have free range of doing what we want. So originally you had started working with a publisher for this and you've switched publishers recently. So you are with a small indie publisher. So has that kind of constricted any of your creative freedom, or do you feel like you have a pretty good communication with them with the whole story and how it's moving forward?
I absolutely adore my publisher, the Four Horsemen. I mean, first of all, as somebody who's on a blasphemy list, not one, but two, going with a publisher called the Four Horsemen couldn't be, I mean, if somebody had just plucked it out of heaven and went here, it's just so perfect. I couldn't love it anymore. They have probably been a match made in heaven would be an understatement in that sense from a creative standpoint, especially like even with the cover. the original cover I loved. It was beautiful. I had a lot of control over it. It was great. When they told me, we're going to take your love of cosplay and integrate it, my mouth pretty much hit the floor. Erica and Val, four of the Four Horsemen, CEO and COO, I looked at them in the Zoom meeting and I went, I'm sorry, you're going to do what? You know, it was this moment, huh? And they said, we're going to take your pictures. They said, because you're cosplaying as these characters. They said, and we're putting you on the cover. And I was like, no, we're not going to do that. And they were like, no, that's what we're doing, Honey Bunch. And I said, no, I already have the covers planned out. You know, here they are. And they were like, aren't you sweet? No. They were like, you need to trust us. And I was like, okay. And they said, but we're going to do it in a collaborative way. And I was like, okay, this is where I have to trust they know best and let them do it. And I was really happy with the results. I mean, I was thrilled with them. And then from an editing standpoint, they've held my hand because believe me, I've been on the ledge a couple of times with these people where I've emailed them and been like, oh my God, you know, I don't know what an Oxford comma is. And they've had to call me and be like, calm down and breathe. It's okay. And like, you have to understand, I was a martial artist and then I was a nurse. Like, I don't do this. And they were just as sweet as they could be about it. And all they've tried to do is elevate my writing. So from a constrictive standpoint, no, there's been no issues with that at all. They've just wanted to make the story better, but where the story's going, that's totally in my control. And they were very clear about that. They were like, we don't want to stop your story. Do what you need to do. Any questions, I go to them. And they respond. It's like, hey, this is what it is. This is what we think you should do. But at the end of the day, it's your voice. They said, you tell it, you know, however it's going to be. The interior design of the book, the layout, I've let them do that. I've told them, yes, I want my dragons in the book visually. I would like, you know, and they were like, great, pick out the picture. What do you want? And I'm like, well, I got this illustration from Pandy and she does my dragons. Great, we'll put it in. I mean, there's no...
Yeah.
No, Danielle, you're not going to do that. They'll give me their opinion and it's professional, but they're willing to try anything. You know, I told them I want to do an Oracle card deck for book 4 for Kingdom Come.
Okay.
Because cool. The Oracles read, you know, Oracle cards. All right, we'll figure out how to do it. Let's go. Let's have a discussion. They've been beautiful to work with and I'm completely thrilled. I've been very happy with it. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that they push me in that sense as a writer. And even like as a, doing the covers, that was something I would never have done that.
Yeah.
Ever in a million years.
That was actually going to be one of my questions was, when you originally started the series, did you want to cosplay for the covers? And so you just answered that. No, it wasn't on your horizon.
Wasn't on my radar at all. Sometimes I've cosplayed just to see if the character costumes work. So when I write it, I'm like, is this even realistic? You know, can Desdemona really fight in the cape? How long is the cape? How should her hair be? Is it going to get pulled? It's little things like that that I've done to add a little more realness. And also I come from a cosplay background. So of course you're going to cosplay as your characters. I mean, look, I love cosplaying as Harley Quinn. You know, you'll catch me with a mallet and some red spandex any day of the week on the con floor. But sometimes, you know, you want to cosplay as your own characters because it, like I said, it adds more realness and depth when you're writing. So when I did it, I never thought they were going to end up at the on the cover of anything. I mean, my dream is to walk on a con floor and see a King Jarvok walk by me. And I might just lose my mind at that point. So I'm warning you right now out there, if anybody ever does it, I'm gonna have the fangasm. Let's be clear. You're gonna have me following you around the entire con asking to take your picture. That's what's going to happen.
So amazing. So amazing. And I bet it was so fun to like have them do this whole photo shoot and like all the different costumes. And I saw that you've already done photo shoots for a lot of the future book covers. That's just really exciting. And it's exciting that then they can look at it and say, okay, that's the person who created all of these words, the person behind the page. That's what this podcast is all about. And you get to be seen right there on the cover. So exciting. And speaking of cosplay, you are dressed up right now. So yes. For those of you who are listening, you can't see, but if you are watching on Patreon, you can see this lovely costume we've got. So go ahead and tell us, who are you? Cosplay.
I'm giving you a little Aurora vibes today. I always kind of come as Aurora, complete with my Aurora crown, which I have to give a shout out to Jamie at Enchanting Earth. She did the Aurora crown. She actually owns a crystal shop in Topeka, Kansas. She's on Instagram at Enchanting Earth Co. And I met her after she read book one. And so we became friends. She's absolutely lovely. She's just the sweetest person. And we designed the Aurora crown, and we went back and forth, and she's like, you need to do an Aurora crown. She's like, let's be clear. And she actually, it's hard to see, but she even has the angelite disc, and this is real angelite with the archangel sigil in it.
Oh, wow.
Just like Jarvok.
That is amazing.
And she sells them. They sell out and people buy them, and it's clear quartz. And so I always have an Aurora crown. And after that, I was like, yeah, we're good. Like, how do you say no to an Aurora crown? And I've had people buy them and they're like, yeah, I have my Aurora crown on right now. And I'm like, what? And they're like, I'm reading the book with an Aurora crown.
That's so cool. Like,
and then they joke and they always quote Lady Serena, every gal should wear her crown. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. That's, you know, so I always, whenever I cosplay or I do interviews, I'm usually dressed as Aurora with my crown on. Because, yeah, every gal should have a crown. I completely agree with that.
I love that. Let's dive into Locked Out of Heaven. So Aurora has a very big part in there. So tell us, who is she? And then what is the entire story within this first book in the series?
The first book is I always like to say it's angels with daddy issues. You know, that's kind of the gist of that first book. Mm-hmm. But I also, if I had to put a modern day kind of comparison to it, I like to think of it as, imagine walking into work and finding out your pension is gone and they're locking the doors and you're out of a job. Mm-hmm. And this is all you've done your whole life. Boss is gone. He's left on the helicopter. He doesn't know you anymore. And that's it. And everything you've worked for, it's all gone. That's what these angels are facing. They've been here on Earth, prepping the Earth for the next big project from the Creator. And all of a sudden, he doesn't need them anymore. There's no word from the top why. It's just done and gone. So there's two factions. There's the virtue angels, who are a little elitist and believe they have been the favorite this whole time. And then there's the power brigade angels, who are the foot soldiers of the archangels. They've been fighting the war against Lucifer. They've been doing all the grunt work. And they've been told, nope, your services are no longer necessary. See you later. Bye-bye. And both factions are blaming the Creator. But the power brigade is kind of looking at the virtue angels like, you might have had something to do with this. We're not completely convinced. And so they decide to just stay in hiding, because their attitude is, you're not coming to look for us and you're stuck in the same position. And so now the two have to sit here on Earth and figure out, well, now what is my identity? It's a matter of, what do you do when you're hurt? Do you lash out, or do you decide, I'm just going to go help everybody and not deal with my pain? In Aurora's case, she decides to take the road of, I'm going to go help everybody and pretend none of this exists, which I think we can kind of identify with.
Yep.
Jarvok, on the other hand, decides, I'm going to go the other way and I'm going to keep everybody who is loyal to me safe. But gosh forbid you ever cross that line with me, because then I'm going to toast you. And he sits by and bides his time until he can finally consolidate power all for himself. Which, once again, I think we can relate to in a way of lashing out. Mm-hmm. And that's where they're at. And then obviously humans populate the Earth and they decide, well, there might be something to this human thing too. And they discover that when they're worshipped by humans, it equals power. And they become our pagan gods and goddesses, eventually our Egyptian gods and goddesses. And it gives a whole new spin on the polytheistic pantheon and what we know and what we know of it. And from there, a war erupts.
Oh, I love it. The birth of the Fae, where they came from. Oh, there's so much. And you summed it up beautifully. And I'm excited to see where it goes. I mean, you said there could be 15 books here. So we have so much to unpack. And you kind of mentioned it as well, that something that surprised me within the series or within this book was that there were well-known biblical stories that popped up. So was that always something you wanted to do, was bring in how the Fae are connected to the modern biblical stories that we hear?
Originally, when I told the story orally, I peppered some things in, but I wasn't sure. Mm-hmm. It just kind of happened. When I sat down and said, okay, now I've got to flush this out.
Right.
I had always been somebody, my father is very Catholic, so I was raised very Catholic. I had been to CCD and, you know, religious instruction school, the whole thing. I had always been a very curious child when it came to religion. It didn't didn't make a lot of sense in some aspects to me. So I always studied it. Mm-hmm. And I did go to a religious college. So I had to take Bible study and all this other. So I had a lot of questions and I thought this might be a good way to bring some of those questions in a different way.
Yeah.
And so I thought now's kind of a cool time. So I put them in and I was very specific on the stories I chose. Mm-hmm. And I do that through the first couple books.
Okay.
There are things you'll hear that all of a sudden become a fae event. Mm-hmm. I did pick it in that sense. I was like very choosy because mm-hmm. I was trying not to offend. I really was. For those of you that put me on the blasphemy list, I was really trying not to offend, but things happen. So, I did study the hierarchy of angels mm-hmm. because I didn't know virtue angels are really in the hierarchy and they mm-hmm. really were nature angels that I didn't know. So when I found that, I was like, oh, there are my nature angels. Cool. Because I was just calling them at the time nature angels. I was like, I don't know what they are.
Right.
Obviously the power brigade I made up, but I tried to kind of pull what I could mm-hmm. and study it and grab it to try to give it a little more weight. It was a conscious and unconscious decision all at the same time.
So this is going to be a big series then. And I'm really excited to dive into more as they come out, as they are released. Mm-hmm. But your first book is currently an audiobook and mm-hmm. I loved your audio recording professionals. They were amazing. I loved how they read the story. So much fun. And I even went onto your Instagram and saw like a little video of the yes. woman and it's incredible. I think it was done so wonderfully. Do you, obviously there's a bunch of different characters that might come through these books, but do you think these audio people will keep those characters as we go through or it might have to be changed?
I'm hoping. Mm-hmm. I loved Skyboat Media did the audio. Mm-hmm. They were phenomenal. Gabrielle and Stefan, wonderful. The minute Stefan called me about doing the audiobook and I picked up the phone and I heard his voice. Ugh. I went, oh my God, Jarvox calling me. Like I stopped and held the phone and I went, oh dear. And I was like, yeah. And he introduced himself and I said, well, what do you envision? He goes, well, I'd like to do Jarvox. And I went, oh yeah, mm-hmm, you mm-hmm. got it. Because it was just like,
perfect.
He was Jarvox. Mm-hmm. I couldn't. There was no one else.
Yeah.
And I just said, look, you're Jarvox as far as I'm concerned. I said, but I don't think you could be Aurora. You know? I was like, no offense. And he went, no, that would be my partner, Gabrielle. And I was like, okay, too. I love this. I love, you know, mm-hmm. it was just so well done. Mm-hmm. And once again, it was so collaborative.
Right.
I'd like to work with them for Thine Eyes of Mercy. And there's always a lag in between.
Right.
To get everything, to get the production right. Because the thing that struck me most with Skyboat was my friend Jacob Rivera, who's an opera singer, had sang Chaos Be With You. And I called and I said, I have this snippet of this Gregorian chant of my friend singing Chaos Be With You. I'd like to put it in. And there wasn't even a question. They were like, send it to us. We'll see.
Oh, it's amazing.
They called us back. Danielle, where do you want it? I mean, they were like, what would you like? And I said, well, I think at the end of the chapter where the dark fate decide chaos be with you is our blessing. And they said, we have an idea to put it in two places. And it was done.
Wow.
And I was like, that's it. Like, you're not going to question. They were like, why would we question you? They said, the quality is good. We love his voice. Yeah. Let's put him in. I was like, but Skyboat mm-hmm. just worked that way. So I'm hoping that, you know, it'll carry through to Thine Eyes of Mercy. From the ashes as we go. Mm-hmm. So we're working on it right now, actually hoping awesome. That, you know, that'll work out. Mm-hmm. But, I laugh because I'm like, I don't know how many more voices they can do.
Right. And then if other characters come into play, I don't know if you're having the same characters be the point of view or if you're having other characters be the main voice of the stories moving forward.
It's always from that omnipotent kind of point of view. Right. I've always done that, but for Thine Eyes of Mercy, which is out. I concentrate on a different, you still have Jarvox and Aurora, which you see a lot in the beginning, mm-hmm. but we're introduced to a new bishop, Bishop Awen,
okay.
who is our younger fire bishop. And he is an earthborn fae. So he was not born in the Shining Kingdom. He was born here, but he is a fire bishop. So his job is to stoke the passion of the queen for her ideas. So he's got a different point of view than the other three bishops. He's younger. and he is the liaison to London and England. And so you're going to see a very different point of view.
Yeah.
And he's the main focus for the second half of that book.
Okay.
That's kind of the big focus. And like I said, he's very different than the other bishops. He's different than Cadace, different than Caer, different than Ward. He's very different. Ward was the original liaison, mm-hmm. and he loses that privilege because he's been taking bribes from King Henry VIII.
Ooh, so drama.
No. And she catches on and awards that privilege then to Bishop Aylwin. And Aylwin then brings in Queen Mary. Mm-hmm. And we're going to see how these two tutors deal with the Fae and find out if, you know, like father, like daughter.
Exciting. So exciting. Okay. So there's one more thing that I wanted to hit on before mm-hmm. we sign out. And that is how you use music in your writing. So I know you had like a Spotify playlist of some sort. So what type of music really inspires you when you're writing for these characters and for this series?
It's funny, music, I know there's some people that can listen like in, you know, write in dead silence. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you do it. Mm-hmm. Who's ever out there that can do it, my wings off to you. I can't do it. I like to listen to music because I feel like it sets the emotional crescendo for me. Mm-hmm. And the emotional mood of everything. For Locked Out of Heaven, it was Pink's What About Us. To me, that was the theme of the entire book.
Yeah, I can totally see that now that you said that out loud, for sure.
That to me was from them being locked out and just begging the creator for, why did you do this? Mm-hmm. To them even arguing from the Virtue Angels to the Power Brigade and not understanding each other's side mm-hmm. of why are we here? And then the humans arguing back to their pagan gods and goddesses. I thought it covered everybody's side. So to me, I usually pick one song that will encompass the entire theme of the book. Mm-hmm. And then I start looking at the factions themselves and then my protagonists, antagonists, if I have them, or if it's, you know, still the creator and this nebulous kind of character, and start looking at the emotional journey and picking songs. And then I make my playlist. Sometimes I do it in groups of where the book is going to go. Mm-hmm. And start to build it and play it out. And I'll usually listen to it as I'm editing. Mm-hmm. And so I might listen to that playlist a million times over, yeah. but it helps me kind of get in that mood and get in that frame, that mind frame of the characters. And that's why I might go back and edit it out again and see and be like, this doesn't fit anymore. Or I'm not thinking enough like that character. And it mm-hmm. may change the dialogue
right
a little bit. Because I think what I've learned, and I've learned this since working with the Four Horsemen, especially, I have to say my dialogue out loud. And I learned it also from the audiobook, because the way I think it's being said in my head, it's not the way it's being read sometimes.
Yeah.
And music definitely helps with setting the mood. So I just have to kind of go through it. And sometimes I have a podcast on, like, I love the Scrubs rewatch podcast with Donald Faison and Zach Braff. I can listen to that all day. And then I go back and re-listen to that playlist again mm-hmm. and see if the mood is still hitting me the right way.
Right.
I know, like I listened to Pearl Jam's Daughter, and mm-hmm. that to me was Z standing on the mountaintop, who later becomes, you know, takes the name Aurora, and her just speaking to the creator on that cold mountaintop. I thought that kind of captured that mood.
Yeah, that's powerful right there. Yeah.
Of her just, don't call me daughter. That to me was her really like telling the creator, I've had enough of you. Mm-hmm. But I try also not to limit the genre of music. Like I pick music in that playlist that I might not normally listen to in the car mm-hmm. or while I'm working out. I try to open it up to anything. There's on that Spotify, there's songs I would never have thought of. You know, even Tom Petty's Learning to Fly, you know, that kind of was like, duh, that works. You know?
Yeah.
Shocker, or I Won't Back Down. Like I've discovered a lot of Tom Petty, I have to say. Now that I think about it, I'm like, yeah. Tom Petty's made it onto a lot of playlists now that I think. But like I Won't Back Down is perfect for Jarvok's theme. Mm-hmm. That just worked for him. Right. For Thine Eyes of Mercy, I discovered a lot of different artists that never would have thought of, but the mood really worked for the characters, and even how the Dark Fae have changed and their attitudes since declaring the war is over and trying to settle into their new roles as the gods and goddesses of atonement, and how they're like, okay, this is how we're going to do it. And we're going to try to play by these rules and the treaty rules, just trying to settle in yet again. And now that they're more sitting back in judgment of the Light Fae, it all changes. And I think music really helps.
Yeah.
Especially when you're editing 10 different books at one time. I mean, I've jumped from, I'm at book one and then I'm going back and rewriting a new prologue. Then I'm going back to book four and I'm totally jumbled because I wrote a new prologue for book one. And then since then I've added these prologues for books two, three, four, and they're all in Lucifer's tone of voice. I kind of write it as if it was Andy Cohen sitting on the couch at the Real Housewives reunion.
I love that.
So it's him. And with each book, he gets a little snarkier because he's been watching them long enough.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in book two, he's a little more proper and he's like, okay, here we are. We're watching the Fae and this is what they're doing. And then by book four, he's like, okay, girlfriends. So this is what's going on, kiddos. This one did this to this one. This one is sleeping with that one. This one did this. And he's like, so grab your popcorn because something about to go down.
It's going to be a good show.
Yeah. So each one, he's getting a little more like laid back. Mm-hmm. Where he's like, so you guys thought I was bad? Let me tell you what's going down. So music has kind of helped me to get into that and figure it out a little bit more. So I definitely need it. I can't write in dead. If I got to write in dead silence, what you're going to hear coming out of my office is me acting out every line and nobody wants to hear that.
Yeah. Oh, I bet. I know. I have certain songs similar to what you're saying, where I know that it's related to a specific character that I'm writing or a specific scene or a specific emotion. If I don't have that music, my writing is going to be like, okay, something very quiet is happening in the scene because I'm relating what's surrounding me as I'm writing into the book too. And so music is so huge with emotional cues and everything. So
I can remember where I was in eighth grade when I danced like slow dance for the first time with a boy. You know what I mean? It's like, it takes us back to those emotional cues and it helps to relate that reader to that point. I know for book 7 and 8, I've actually put song lyrics into it. So I have a character, you know, my CIA agent is sitting in his office and certain music, you know, lyrics are in there because he's listening to the radio. And I think sometimes it helps bring that reader in. Yeah. I think the show Umbrella Academy did it the best.
Mm-hmm.
Their soundtrack for the first season was so perfect in that it helped, you know, when they were all dancing to Tiffany's, I Think We're Alone Now, in all the different rooms, mm-hmm. and it, you know, brought them all together. They had all different things. I think that show did it really, really well. Mm-hmm. And I think Supernatural did it very well. Like everybody mm-hmm. knows Carry On My Wayward Son, you know, that's Supernatural.
Yeah.
You know, like I think certain shows do it where they take a song and that song is the theme for that character's journey. So I tend to pick up on that. And I've done it with book 7 and 8. I've actually just put the song lyrics in. So one of my characters is just always listening to the radio and it foreshadows things that are happening.
Oh, so cool. So cool. Oh, music can be so powerful. I just love it. I love it. Everything that we've talked about today has been so eye-opening and I'm so excited to see where everything goes with these characters, with the storyline, with the time frames that you are expanding upon within the series. So I'm so excited about this. This wouldn't be Read It With Whiskey without talking a little bit about whiskey. So what is your favorite whiskey to drink?
My patient introduced me to this peanut butter whiskey. I had never had it before, but oh my gosh. Yes. And he brings it around during Christmas. So I'm hoping that next year I'll get it again because I had it this past Christmas. So right around next year, I know I got a little bit of time. I got another 10 months, but you know, I'll get a little bit more next year again. Fingers crossed. He gets it in Pennsylvania. So I got a little bit of time. Maybe I can get him to sneak me up some.
That peanut butter whiskey. If you can find a distillery that can make a good peanut butter whiskey, just stick with them. Cause I'm definitely about that life.
It's really good.
So good. All right, Danielle, tell our listeners, where can they find you? Where can they find Birth of the Fae and learn more about you?
You can follow me on Instagram at birthofthefae_novel, on Twitter at birthofthefae, on my website at birthofthefae.com. And then you can find the books on Amazon, at Barnes & Noble's, Target.com, wherever good books are sold online. That's where you can find us, or follow me, like I said, on Instagram, or check out 4horsemanpublications.com.
Awesome. Oh, I'm so excited that I got to have you on the show. I'm so honored to speak with you. And I hope maybe we can bring you back in the future when your 15th book is out to round out the entire series.
I would love that.
But thank you so much for your time. I'm so glad you were here with me.
Thank you.
I think you can tell how jazzed I was at talking with Danielle. Oh, we had such a good time. I can't believe we blew through an entire hour. And of course, some of that content isn't here in this regular audio version of the podcast. So if you want to watch the full video footage and see Danielle's cosplay in person, then definitely head over to Patreon. And yeah, I did have to cut out just a little bit for this public episode, so head on over to Patreon to get all of the nitty-gritty details. And a surprise for you guys, since interviewing Danielle, I have actually been able to read book 2 in the Birth of the Fae series, which is titled Thine Eyes of Mercy. And you guys, Danielle does it again! I don't know how she does it, but these books are so... oh, they just draw you in. You get so invested in the characters and the story. And the cool thing about book 2 is that it doesn't give away what happens at the end of book 1 necessarily, because there is a time shift. And we talked about it in the interview, how Danielle's vision for this series is spanning hundreds of years. And so you aren't going to get any spoilers by reading the book blurb for book 2. I'm just putting it out there because, like I said, we don't do spoilers in this podcast. So here is the book blurb for Thine Eyes of Mercy. What happens when you have to give in to your enemy? Queen Aurora, monarch of the Court of Light Fae, and King Jarvok, leader of the Court of Dark Fae, are exhausted and battle-worn after centuries of fighting. The attrition has taken its toll upon their kin and power bases. All wars evidently end, even magical ones. The Dark and Light Fae have set their elemental magic and weapons down, but all is not quiet in the Vale. King Jarvok was confident his army could win the war, but at what cost? It was time to act like a king, not a power-hungry megalomaniac. That was his creator's title, not his. He reaches out to Queen Aurora, and the Treaty of Bodhisattva is signed. The treaty promises the Fae will never spill each other's blood again. Rules for their human worshippers are put into place. The Court of Dark must not interfere with humans in a malignant way, but they can act as gods and goddesses of atonement. The Court of Light can return to acting as advisors to the European royal families, as they have done for centuries. However, Queen Aurora and King Jarvok will learn that while they are playing war games, their humans have changed and moved away from the old ways. The two monarchs face unknown challenges in a world where Christianity, not paganism, is the new power. Sometimes the devil you know is better than the one you do not. As we discussed in the interview, there is some Christian fiction ties within the book, and she did it again. She brought it back, and I'm really excited about this book because it actually trails after one of the queens of England, which I'm not going to get into too much details of. So you definitely want to grab Locked Out of Heaven along with Thine Eyes of Mercy because book 3 is on its way. And of course, we can't leave without talking about the book that's coming up next. So in our next episode, we are going to talk with Destiny Hawkins. She is the author of the Descendants series. Book 1 and book 2 are both out, and book 3 is going to be releasing this year. This was a really, really fun conversation, and I'm so excited for you guys to dive into this magical world with me and Destiny. So I will see you in the next episode. You've been listening to an episode of Read It With Whiskey. I am your host, Laura Gentinen, and I just wanted to personally hop in and say thank you so much for listening. Your support of the podcast means so much to me, and I would really appreciate it if you could go onto your favorite podcast platform and rate and review the show. By rating the show, you're going to help more people find the podcast so then we can grow. Once you review the show, share it on your social media, share your favorite episode with your friends, and come back next time to hear more from self-published authors. I'll talk to you soon.